More than an hour, actually.
Okay, why don't we pull into the power that brought us here and keeps us here. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, Nate's going to launch us off into 4 and 5.
Right. So to pick up where we left off hours ago, as it seems now, to just touch back on the fourth step, I think it's relevant, you know, after we take our third step, make that decision, like Mickey was talking about, it's essentially a contract to move forward with the rest of the world, to launch into what's coming next, right? And that's exactly what the book says on page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first of which is a personal house cleaning, many of us had never attempted, though our decision, meaning to take a third step, was a vital and crucial step. It could have very little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things which had been in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. There were many years where I completely missed that beautiful little two-word piece that says strenuous effort. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I think of the word strenuous, there's not really a lot of wiggle room to slack off, right? I think just strained, maxed out, like everything I've got. There's a lot of four steps I've run into that are not necessarily with the most strenuous effort, right? And for me, the first four step I ever wrote, again, it was that experience where I wasn't sure that I had been through the steps when I had been through the steps. So when I wrote my four step, it was a list of names and why I was angry. And that was it, basically. And, you know, again, I'm not one that's bitter about the experience I had. I 100% believe that that person was giving me the absolute best they had at the time. But what it did is it reminded me of all the things I was angry about. And I was really confused as to why nothing changed after it. Which obviously we're so blessed to have this four-column inventory as it's laid out in the book. And go figure, it's right in the book. But I mean, if you don't know what you're looking for, if you've just picked up this book for the first time and are just peeking through these pages, I didn't see it. I wouldn't see it. It's practically in camouflage in there if you don't know what you're looking for, right? So it was so important to eventually run into someone. Like when four-column inventory was introduced to my life, it was like the spheres had changed 180 degrees. I became addicted to four-column inventory. I'm not even kidding. It was a solution for me right off the bat. I didn't realize it. It was a big help, but I became like obsessed. I was like, this is magic. This is just magic. Like, I can't even believe what's happening by the end of this piece of inventory. Is it an excellent tool? Of course it is. I'm like, but like, if one works well, give me two more, right? Like, anything that makes me feel elated, I dive right into. Even the work we do, it's crazy. So, our inventory process works very well. And I'm one that believes it works perfectly, right? In that third column, you know, I need to know who I'm resentful at. And for me also, I think it's really important, too, to note that, you know, we look at people, principles, institutions, right? And I was just talking with someone before the meeting about what does that necessarily look like? When I think of a principle, am I even really kind of, usually that's the one that gets pushed to the end when I'm making my list, right? It's like, yeah, maybe some stuff comes up, maybe it doesn't. But for me, a perspective that was shown to me regarding principles, my old ideas can apply to that piece as well. The principle of what I expect of myself, right? For example, what a good AA member looks like, right? That's a principle. That's an old idea, and that's changed for me a lot over the years, right? I could be resentful at what a successful person looks like, right? Because it's not me, right? At least I'm convinced of it. But even still, like, these are things, like, these are old ideas. These are thresholds that I've built for measuring how much I suck in life that are not very good criteria. They're not honest, right? So how do I have any idea how to even take a peek at this stuff utilizing the tools that we do? And I find that the four-column inventory works beautifully for that kind of thing, to take a thorough look at this old idea, right? Because I do. I'm resentful about it. When I feel like I'm not measuring up in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm absolutely resentful at the principle of what a good AA member looks like, you know? So I just throw that out there for your consideration, just because we never know. Everybody's old ideas are different, right? We all have different experiences. We're all shaped differently in terms of our what we've been through and what we're going to go through. So it's always just good to kind of poke that bee's nest, what I find when I'm building my list. So, and Mickey alluded to this as well, two names that should absolutely be on the inventory that I do are myself and God. And that was like taboo the first time I heard it. Literally, I had never heard of writing inventory on yourself. It seemed like the most selfish, self-seeking, like, exercise you could ever get into, really? You're like that important? You want to write inventory about yourself? But again, my head was like this big. I could barely fit through a door. I knew the book too well at that point, you know? Anything outside of what was, you know, what I deemed the right way, I was not having it. I just wasn't having it. And here come to find out, I was actually like suffering because of these old ideas. So that's again why I'm so passionate about these old ideas that I stack myself up against. I've got to be real. I've got to be honest. I've got to utilize the tools to get down to causes and conditions, like it says, what's really driving me to do what I do. Because why all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, why for a lifetime has it never been enough to just be Nate? Why for a lifetime has it never been enough just to be you? Right? And maybe not everybody experiences that, but that's kind of the baseline narrative that I have in my head, right? Let me find something that I fall short on and I'll measure myself just under the bar, right? It makes no sense. Literally, in my life today, everything goes quite well. I'm actually pretty blessed in my professional life and my marriage and schooling that I've done, yet I suck through every single piece of all of it all the time. If you asked my brain how I was doing, I fell short all the time. But I really didn't. That's the point, right? I find any and every opportunity to fill in that space that exists under the bus, right? When we say under the bus, I'm willing to just roll under the bus. If someone's going to pay for this, it might as well be me. If someone's wrong in the room, it might as well be me. I'm not worth a shit, is what it comes down to. That's what this mind is telling me. And on any given day, that's the narrative that I can be fed from that darkness that still resides within me. Right, when we're talking about that darkness versus the light, that kind of narrative that's looking to destroy me from the inside out is not coming from the light. It's not coming from God. At least that's my viewpoint of it, right? So if it's not light, it must be dark. I'm convinced of it. So when we start to come up against this concept of like, wow, like I've got some real demons that I'm battling with, essentially, you know? This is not normal kind of stuff that I'm grappling with internally. It scared me to death. I was like, I need some real firepower to be able to live and to be able to battle this stuff, essentially. By firepower, I mean God. I need God. I need God to the umpteenth degree. I need to have a relationship with God that can stand up against the darkness that I know exists, right? Because again, like I mentioned last night, I feel in a lot of instances like I live in a body with a person that wants to do really well and love life and be a productive citizen, and then the other half wants to just kill me. It's kind of a conflict to have both those existing at the same time, right? So this inventory process is so effective, and it's not about the execution. We're so hard on ourselves, right? I mean, I don't think that's a false statement in a room full of alcoholics. We are so hard on ourselves all the time, right? I'm not doing it right, I'm falling short, whatever the case may be. I must be missing the mark, because that's what I do, right? So, to have the opportunity to write inventory, to see the truth, and to make the effort to do so. Because a lot of the time, literally, it's my effort that counts, right? I don't, even now, there was a time in my life where I could write the most beautiful, pristine piece of four-column inventory you'd ever seen in your life. If there was a museum for inventory, it would have been in there, right? And I took a lot of false pride in the fact that I knew how to rip a piece of inventory. Yet, there was one major problem to that. None of what was in there was actually the truth. So, it was really good and it looked nice on paper. It just didn't get down to the level where I needed it to actually be able to utilize the tool in the way that it's outlined. I just wanted it to be the right answer, the answer that looked right. It wasn't the truth. Because when I get down to that level, it's extremely uncomfortable. It's not fun. And I don't look forward to writing inventory the way that I used to, because I know it's going to suck. Because I'm going to see some things about myself that are not necessarily things I want on a resume, if you know what I mean. Mm. Right? But if I'm not willing to look at the truth of myself, I'm never going to be able to move forward. I'm never going to be able to you know, strive in the direction of my ideal of who I'd love to be in God. And as it says in the book, we are not saints, right? That's not a hall pass to be a lunatic, right? And in fact, I think for the most part, what we're really trying to do in here is strive to be saints. We're not saints, but we're certainly trying to strive and head in that direction, right? To just be good, genuine, God-reliant people. And so it's interesting, kind of the evolution of the inventory, because, like I said, this could very well be written in German when I first looked at it. I had no idea what was going on in this book, and had someone not shown me exactly what it looked like, right? Who are you mad at? Why are you mad? What does it affect inside of you? Not just check, but what is it really that's going on in there, right? More discomfort. I say this to men that I work with all the time. There is no such thing as too many opportunities to be vulnerable. It's the worst. Who wants to hear that, right? I don't want to take any opportunity to be vulnerable. It sucks. Or be vulnerable. So any opportunity that I have to dig down deeper to where it hurts, it's not what I want to do, but you better believe it's what I need to do. And for me, I have to. So that, you know, then I move forward, right, to the fourth column. What does that look like? Where am I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, frightened? It's all those things, but what does it really look like? And a lot of the time, I'd give my very best effort to bring God into this inventory, to really ask to see the truth and to be rid of the thing, whatever it is that I'm looking at. But sometimes, and I'm just throwing it out there in the spirit of honesty, sometimes I write the inventory and I'm still not sure if I actually got down to the root. Has anybody ever had an experience where you write inventory and you're like, did that even work? Right? I don't know. Thank God for the opportunity to look to what we're talking about next, a fifth step, right? If I'm able to have to execute a fifth step with an objective viewpoint, someone that I trust, there is all sorts of opportunity to poke where it hurts and to really get down to what's there. I believe in the spirit of doing it, something happens to us. With just about everything we do, in the spirit of doing it, something happens. We don't have to do it perfectly to make sure that it counts or to be sure that God recognizes us and gives us the gold star so that we can move to the next level. Right? In a lot of instances, it's about me just putting forth the best effort that I can. And in the spirit of that, eventually I will get to what I need to, right? Even if it's through, again, having a sponsor poke me where it hurts through the course of the fifth step. Sometimes it takes that. Sometimes I've wrapped so many layers of self-delusion around a situation because I'm not quite ready to be done being mad yet. Let's be honest, right? I may be writing about it because I know it needs to be gone. But what happens is for some reason, I think by writing a fourth column, I'm completely saying what happened in the second column is okay, and I'm rolling over on my back, right? And I realize that that's not true today. Someone could have genuinely wronged me, but again, if I'm hanging on and continuing to drink the poison, what's going on there, right? There's something I'm owning. It doesn't necessarily mean that what the other person did was right, but there's something going on inside with me if it's affecting me the way it is. Right? And for me, it doesn't even have to be frothy, I'm raging, resentful. If I walk into a room and I see someone and try to avoid them because it's really uncomfortable, I've got to ask myself, what's going on there? Because what this book says is we can go anywhere free men can go. So what does that really mean? Why am I ducking someone at the grocery store? Right? No, there's no resentment, whatever, it's uncomfortable. Why? Why? Right? I shouldn't have to avoid people. So I offer that as well. But and when it comes to the fear piece, for me it's so beneficial to look at it from just the basic perspective that Mickey talked about. What's the fear? Why do I have it? What does my self-reliance look like? Meaning, like, how do I play God to try to manage this fear in my own life? And what is the God-reliant piece of it? Well, it's that I'm not relying on God at all, basically. For me, one of my classic examples is that I'm afraid of what people think of me, right? Classic. Or greatest hit, as we refer to it in certain circles. Why do I have that fear? Because I want to be liked and accepted and validated, right? What do I do because of it, right? What does my self-reliance look like? When I'm afraid of what you think of me, what do I do to try to make that fear go away? A lot of the times what it looks like for me is that I jeopardize my morals. I put myself in situations I don't want to be in. I have conversations I don't actually even agree with. I'm basically like dancing a jig so that you think I'm awesome, right? Then I walk away feeling like, wow, I just compromised so much through the course of that, right? And for me, that's poison. I can't act that way, and that's why it fails me. Even if it's just something as simple as all of a sudden I'm like engaged in this conversation that's way outside the bounds of what I want to be talking about, but everybody's talking about it, and all of a sudden I feel like the odd man out, so I jump in. Whoa, that's not okay, right? And it seems so petty. I get it. Everybody's like, dude, please, give me a real fear. But I know at the same time you understand what I'm talking about. Because I will compromise myself to the end of my days to be sure that you like me. And that's what that looks like. I will metaphorically bend over backwards and break my own spine to make sure that I look good for you. And it's because I'm not trusting and relying upon God to care for me and protect me. And we could theorize till we're blue in the face as to what that would look like. Because I've done that too. Well, what would God's will look like? I don't know. I don't know any more than the fact that I'm not relying on him, right? Because I don't know. There's so much unknown in what God would want for me. But what I do know is that I'm not relying on God. And that's the important part. Because when I say I'm not trusting and relying upon God to care for me and protect me, 50 times over in a fifth step, that resonates on a subconscious level. You know, my soul hears that and something happens for sure. In the sex conduct for me also, again, I'm not trying to just beat this thing to death, but it's been 3 hours. It's a refresher, I guess. So sex inventory for me was like, when I first came in, I thought for sure that wasn't an area I needed any attention in. I was good, right? Come to find out I was not. Not even close. Come to find out, in fact, in the spirit of honesty, the opposite sex is actually one of my favorite drugs aside from alcohol, right? If I'm being honest, desire, even just to be wanted from a distance, was my drug for a long time, right? Just want you to like me. Even if I have no intentions of doing anything with that, I just want to be sure you like me. I want to be sure you want me, whatever the case may be. And I can use my sex powers just in that, and I live in that third piece of that fear. I'm fully managing my own life, trying to create false security, right, and happiness through the way that I interact in the realm of sex, and it was never healthy. So that needed a thorough examination, and even to this day, and it's not just about people either, you know. And I'm going to go there because it's relevant and it's uncomfortable. But a lot of people that I know, right, and it's in my own experience, struggle with things aside from humans in the sexual realm, if you're catching my drift, right? Prostitution, pornography, go on down the line. That sucks, right? Nobody likes to talk about that stuff. But I've seen that stuff destroy more souls than I think anything else that I've seen. It's unbelievable. The amount of spiritual deterioration that can happen inside me because of sexual misconduct. And I want to pretend like it's just sex. It's no big deal. Whatever. Not my truth. It's not my truth. And in fact, that's an area for me personally where I could literally destroy myself quicker with that than I could with alcohol. I know it. Because I remember back to having experiences where I would compromise myself sexually and literally know for a fact that I was living a way I didn't want to live, that I did something that was completely outside the bounds of what would be acceptable behavior, even for me, but I'm doing it. And then just literally waking up, coming to with the most crippling sense of sickness and guilt, right? I mean, some of the worst guilt and disgust that I've ever experienced has been around that kind of stuff, right? So is it just sex? I don't think so. Right? There's more to it for me. And again, we're just talking about trying to lighten it up a bit. We're right down the darkness again. Yeah, right down the dark hole again. But I think it's relevant. At least it is for me. Just because that's an area I feel like that even when you're working a solid program, when you're working out of the big book, it can still be an area that's kind of taboo to talk about, right? Why is it a third of what we write? It's got to be relevant, right? And it's literally one of the biggest pain points that I've experienced even in recovery. And go figure, like, everybody I work with has the same thing going on. Right? Nobody wants to talk about it. So to launch into the fifth step, right? Clearly, once we have this beautiful inventory, we need to do something with it. And the way it says in here, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every dark cranny of the past, right? We told someone else our entire life story. And for me, that goes a long way, even beyond just the actual execution of a fifth step. Because what happens to me when some, even just one person on planet Earth, has a complete picture of who I am at the truth level, that's a very incriminating place to be for me, right? I used to love to piecemeal off my truth to different people, right? A little bit to the sponsor, a little bit to this guy, a little bit to the, he doesn't care, I'll just tell him about the worst stuff, right? And so nobody ever had like a full true picture of who I really am. I never gave myself the opportunity to be transparent, to experience the vulnerability on the level that's truly necessary for me to have any level of freedom, is what I found out. And it applies to the fifth step as well. So, and it's good we picked this to do all, because it's not, you know, we couldn't talk for a full hour about this, because you find someone, you sit down, and you read your fifth step, right? Check. I'm just kidding, but there's a little more to it, but the reality for me is that it can almost be, fifth steps can almost be seen as finish lines, right? Let's be honest. Like, I can't wait to do my fifth step. Something magical is going to happen. Like, I'm going to be lifted off planet Earth. It's all going to be good, and then I'll be able to just float on down the line, happy, joyous, and free. And that's not necessarily always the case for me, right? Fifth steps can be, and they don't have to be ritualistic either. I don't have to go to the top of a mountain face-to-face and sit down and read with someone one-on-one for 12 hours, right? And in fact, a lot of like what it looks like in real life for me is like an hour a week until it's done, right? It's just how it works. I mean, and does it have any less effect? I don't think so, right? So all I'm saying is like we can get real hung up, again, self-defeating in the execution, in the process. It's not about the execution. It's not about the process. It's about the intention and the spirit behind what it is that I'm doing and why it is that I'm doing it, right? So that's it, right? And for me, it's the most effective fifth steps are when I'm, it's basically like a dialogue, right? I'm talking with my sponsor. I'm putting the stuff on the table to the very best of my ability. And I'm accepting feedback with an open heart sometimes, even when it stings. Right, and not just so that he can hear himself talk and give me, you know, oh well, this is what I think about this, and give me all this philosophy. It's more like if we experience this on the other end, when I see that with someone I'm working with, and say, man, I'm feeling inspired. It's not even a thought. It's like God is poking me in the heart, saying, push right there. There's gold to be mined under there. Help them flip that stone over, right? And I receive that same experience where maybe I miss something. Maybe I'm not even to the point. Maybe I'm not even to the root. And that happens. I mean, I'm human, and I do the best that I can. But a lot of the time, I'm just not ready to get there. So when I'm kind of guided there by some objective input and some truth, magic can happen, right? All of a sudden, like, these stones are being flipped over where it's like, no wonder I didn't look under there. It's horrifying, right? I don't want to own that. That's the worst. I was still trying to protect this. One of my favorite pieces of selfishness that shows up in my fourth column of my resentment inventory is that reputation management. That's the phrase that I use. I try to selfishly manage my reputation in all situations, right? Doesn't matter if I'm with family, doesn't matter if I'm with AA, at work, whatever the case may be. I rely on myself, not God, to be sure that I'm putting it on the table the way you want to see it, right? Spiritually bankrupting myself in the process, mind you. But that fifth step, I mean, again, is it a massive part of what we're doing here? Of course it is, right? But sometimes, like I said, that's why I led with that, because for me it was like, as soon as I get to the fifth step, then I'll be in the big boy club, right? Once I do a fifth step, I'll finally be on the level with the rest of the people. And it just wasn't the truth, right? I mean, I don't think I actually had, you know, when I first went through the steps in like a way that actually produced some shifting internally, I didn't have any kind of like white light experience where I was like lifted off planet Earth. It was more just like, onward trudge, here we go, right? We're just going to keep moving. And but it's all worth it. It's worth it because when something shifts in me and I'm actually starting to see the genuine truth about myself, I have an absolute love-hate relationship with that experience. I hate it to death, but I absolutely love it because I know I can't live without it. And the magic question, and it's funny because a lot of people ask me this and I don't have the answer for it, but it's like, what does it look like to trust God? What does it look like to follow God's will on planet Earth? How do I trust God? What does it look like? What do I do? Like, give me the answer kind of thing, right? I don't know. But to the best of my understanding at this stage of my recovery, the best way that I can follow God's will for my life is to work my program to the very, very best of my ability. To be vigorously honest to the point that it hurts. And to be embarrassed as often as possible when I have something that needs to be said that I don't really want to be saying. Because as I'm exposing the truth in my own life, that's creating those vulnerable spaces inside of me for God to really get in there and do some work. And to set me up for whatever it is that he has for me to do. Because if I'm just consumed with myself and I'm just moving along trying to take care of what's coming next, am I really available for God to use me in the way that he needs to? I'm not. And that's the place that I end up relying upon myself. I'm a horrible manager of my life, just to reinforce that again. I mean, I don't have the ability to manage my life. I tried this past afternoon. I mean, if I'm being honest, right? Like, I do it all the time. It happens all the time. Where in ways that I don't even realize I'm doing, all of a sudden I'm relying on myself to try to make sure something happens, right? Am I going to be honest about that? Not always, right? And I'm only as sick as my secrets. That's 100% true. It doesn't even matter. And for me, a lot of the time, that I'll talk myself out of everything, right? Who has ever had a thought come on into their mind and said, geez, this would probably be a good thing to discuss with my sponsor, and then just kind of pushed it back to wherever, you know? Yeah, I mean, everybody, right? It's like, what is relevant, right? Like, does this meet the threshold for a conversation? Is it relevant? It's all relevant. That's my theory at this stage of the game. Everything that comes up, why not, right? It's only life or death, right? I mean, I might as well be going and addressing the pebbles rather than just the boulders. And it seems like, wow, dude, that's an awful lot of work. What do you do anything else? You just sit around and look for things all day, every day? That's not the case at all, right? Because what we do is we surrender. We rely on God to show us what needs to be shown. I'm not just, you know, waiting with a pad of paper for something to pop up that I can talk about, right? It's made apparent to me. And most of us will have that gauge where when something comes up that's objectionable, we know. We know. And it's a matter of what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? Am I going to, you know, take it to the source, take it to where it needs to be brought? Or am I going to try to pretend it doesn't matter? For me to pretend it doesn't matter is a recipe for disaster. Because the next thing you know, it opens the door to bigger things, right? And then I'm being dishonest with myself to the point where I don't even know I'm doing it, right? And the joke that I've said to a couple of people is crazy people don't know they're crazy, right? I've been in places in Alcoholics Anonymous where I've been so crazy that I didn't know I was crazy. And that scares me to death. Because sitting here today, I know that I'm crazy, right? And that's a good thing. And to be able to identify the insanity in my life is huge. But there, if I let that stuff go, if I just neglect my program, push God aside and just take the reins, I'm going to get to a point again where I am strangely insane again, and I don't even realize it. And yeah, I just want to bounce back too to the fact that writing inventory on yourself is a really weird concept. And I just I reiterate that, and I offer that because it's something that I had no, I mean, literally, I was so angry with myself, I had no idea. And I'm talking like this past inventory, right? I don't want to be honest about the way I'm actually viewing myself more often than not. How am I ever supposed to heal if I'm not going to be honest about how I truly feel about myself internally? I can't will my way into that any more than I could stand in front of a mirror and say, you're a good person, you're going to have a great day today. It's just the same kind of approach, right? It's not going to hold up for me. I'm lunatic. Like when it says we, to some extent, we are mentally ill, absolutely. I qualify. I'm crazy. And I'm blessed to be crazy because we actually have a pretty efficient program of action that arrests that insanity to a point that we can actually be normal people. Just go out into that world and blend in. We don't even have to wear A's on our foreheads or anything, right? And more often than not, we're just able to participate in life as members of a society and just be a beacon of light wherever God needs us. And that's scary. Where does God want me to be, right? What's my role? What's my piece in the watch, right? I don't want to be the spring down underneath, right? Make me an hour in, please. Conditional, right? A lot of the time, my relationship with God can be conditional. I'll go all in with you, God, if... fill in the blank, right? If you do this for me, I'll be all in. That's all. You just have to show me that you care about me. I'm all in. Doesn't work that way. I can either be all in with God, regardless of what I'm promised, or I can die trying. The other road, you know? That's just my experience. So, yeah.
Thank you.
On to you.
All right. Thanks, Nate. So the book says, you know, about fifth step, just to tag on that for a moment. Solitary, you know, look at ourselves is seldom sufficient to recover from this disease. There's a grand difference between sitting in our room and cataloging our defects and then going and actually telling somebody else. There's a lot of trust in our program, huh? We want to pick somebody to talk to who is a decent enough person to talk to. It's easy to jump out of a tree on somebody who just admitted something very vulnerable in their lives. It's a lot better to listen and really give them the opportunity to talk about it. And we can make observations. What I'd like to do now, well, and I wanted to give you an example. I sponsor a man in another state who was just starting his fifth step with me on the phone. And I had heard what he was writing about. I had heard it for years. And so he has a way of reading inventory to me. It's like this. Bada, 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 and now it's done. And he's jumped to the next one before I get a shot at him. So I just put the brakes on him gently, and we're going to talk about this. Now, we spent 1 hour, his entire hour, talking about one piece of inventory. Now, I was going to a step retreat in outside Seattle once, and my host was married to a young woman who just got her master's of social work degree. Anyway, she got her MSW. And she's starting to have a practice with traumatized children. That's who she wants to work with. And so she's talking, and I've got my antenna up. It's like God's tapped me on the shoulder. It's Mickey, listen. And she says, trauma, to deal with trauma in children, or I imagine in adults, they cannot gain access to that trauma by themselves. Okay, the trauma is there protecting itself like a cancer cell. It needs somebody else to come in and help them gain access to that. And I'm like, antenna up, right? And the same thing is true in our work and our programs for ourselves. I will get an opinion about, I'll tell you the facts of what's going on, but I can't derive the principles in it. I can't get more universal with it, and my sponsor helps me. So when we went to this thing, it was so well guarded in him that as I began to explore it with him, he started to admit the real underpinnings, and we were really getting there, right? And I just stopped and I said, how are you feeling right now? And I said, he said, I feel like an asshole. Strike that. And I said, why? In essence, he was saying, I feel that way because I didn't get it right. I didn't have that understanding, not knowing that powerlessness also applies there. We're doing the best we can to describe the situation, but maybe somebody else who is not carrying that story, but who has this disease, can help us. Wow. My sponsor, it is uncomfortable for me to talk to my sponsor, because I have given him permission to be in my soul. And it frightens me. Okay? He's going to say something critical of me. And sometimes he does. But it's not critical of me like, you're a fool and I want to shame you. It's just he's gotten in under my protection, my shield. I need that. And if I'm going to be a good sponsee, I need to listen. Do I always think he's right? No. But I listen anyway because I've asked him to help me. Please help me. Now he's going to give it his shot. And I'm not there to argue with him. I'll listen. I'll take it, because otherwise I will be unsponsored and I'm going to die. I think I established that with my talk last night. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to erase two steps out of this program right now. We're just going to throw them out. We're going to make this a 10-step program, all right? Let's take a look at that. Now let me find it in the book here. There's that page where we get to throw out two steps. I can't remember which page that was. All right. This is, let's see. Okay. All right. So we come home from our fifth step, and we spend an hour, we take the book off the shelf, and we examine, have we, you know, tried to make mortar without sand, we're building an arch that we walk through to freedom, we give it these considerations. Sometimes I have found, whoops, I left something out. Early on, it's late because I wanted to sleep with my sponsor's wife. Okay, big deal. He nailed me before I could get it out of my mouth. It was really awkward. But anyway, she's a very beautiful woman. Anyway, and I'm coming right off the ropes, you know, I'm like right out of the zoo. Anyway, let's take steps 6 and 7 and throw them out. We go through this kind of carousel about 6 and 7. Well, there's not much written in the book, so we'll go over to the 12 steps and 12 traditions because we need more tonnage. We need to have more words to get the valid points going on here. So what's step 6 on the wall say? We are entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Can he have them all now? It says on 76. If we can answer, we've gone through our review. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. That's all it says on step 6. So let's put a little TV drama on it. So the little boy is playing with his toy truck. And in the course of it, he breaks it. Now he's over across the room and he's crying because he just broke one of his favorite toys. What's wrong? And he says, Daddy, I broke my truck. Well, come on over here and let's take a look at it. And he comes over to his dad and he's got the truck in his hand in a death grip. And the dad's saying, you know, if you'll let go of this, I can fix it for you. Step 6. If you'll let go of it, I can help you. Right? It's not very sophisticated, but there it is. So we got step 6. Now what we're going to do is, because these are little steps, we can throw them out, right? I would submit to you that without step 6 and 7, there is no program. Here's what will happen without it. You've now cataloged every defect in your character, every screw up, you've got this file full of all this stuff. And you've even gone further and you've said it to somebody. Okay, all right, Mickey, go home and be a good boy. What? What? I can't do anything about this. Steps 6 and 7 are the fulcrum in our program that affects the healing. I get to go to the czar of the universe, not a human being, and say, I'm willing to let go of this, but let's look at that. This is the way I do business. What I'm as being asked to be willing to let go of is how I do business. That's the platform I stand on. I lie, I cheat, I avoid the truth, whatever the tap dance is. Now you're asking me to be willing to let go of my platform of the way I get through life. This is the way I maneuver through life. It's what makes me feel safe. And you want me to abandon that. Well, let's see. How really do you have alcoholism or not? Right? Because if you have alcoholism, it will eat you alive. Guaranteed. Does anybody doubt that? How many of us have gotten cornered by this disease and watched it take our lives over? So what's the alternative? Well, I have a fire-breathing dragon behind me, and I've got a dark road in front of me. Which am I going to choose? I know there's a fire-breathing dragon behind me. I've seen it, and I've gotten burned. All I have is the unknown in front of me. Am I going to take that step? Am I going to risk that or not? And then, and for some reason, have you ever seen the movie Joe versus the Volcano with Tom Hanks? All right. So what happens is this guy ends up, like, he's got these great big steamer trunks, and he's out in the Pacific Ocean, and he and Meg Ryan are, like, you know, shipwrecked, and they're floating around in the Pacific Ocean. And there's a scene where the camera draws back. Meg Ryan's passed out over here. She's unconscious. And Tom Hanks is watching the moon come up over the Pacific Ocean. And as the camera draws back, Tom Hanks is about this big now, and the moon is about this big. And Tom Hanks says this. He said, I forgot how big you are. I forgot how big you are. So when we're coming up to the seventh step, we're going to go right into the face of God and say, look, with everything in me, I'm as willing as I can be to have this stuff go away. And now I'm going to say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. When I was 5 years sober, you know, forgive my language, but I'm just going to tell you what happened. I was working in this ad agency, and it was terrible, and I was destroyed inside, and I was 5 years sober, and I was at this point, and you can now have all of me, the good and the bad. And I looked out the window, and I said, God, I know I'm an asshole. If you got any jobs for an asshole, give them to me. Because I can't clean up my act. But if you're willing to take whatever I've got, I'll go to work for you. Because I can't go past my wingspan. This is all I got. I'm willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So, like, do I get washed clean right at that point? No. No, I have more work to do in this contract that Nate referred to. I made a contract with God. I've got a covenant with God. I will do this program, and here's what I'm willing to give you, God. I will give you my life if you'll save my life. That's a pretty swinging deal, huh? And I've got 8 and 9 waiting for me, and we're going to go into those later. But this is my middle step work, is how I actually get into the swamp, for the example of the frog who wants to get into the swamp. This is how I do my job. If you're having trouble writing inventory, go over to your sponsor's house and have him or her babysit you. You can just sit there in their room and write inventory with them. If you're shook up, you can do the same. But my point is just because 6 and 7 don't say much, we lose sight of the fact without this, there is no healing. Without this, there is no healing. We ain't going anywhere. But we'll be able to tell you every single defect of character in our lives. And you know what? We do that. We speak woundology. And we'll tell each other everything we're doing. Well, aren't you sick of it? Aren't you sick of it? Don't you wish you could be better? Don't you wish you could suck a little more free air? What's it take? Like this guy told me when I first got sober, he said, Mickey, relax. All God wants is all you got. And then it goes on to say, and now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. You know, Nate made reference to something earlier. He said, you know, we're busy. We're busy all the time. We are busy. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has us busy all the time. We're watching for, we're working with, we're considering. Aristotle said the unexamined life is not worth living. It's not worth living. So what happens, and this thing, it's very hard for me to articulate, but we came in here to Alcoholics Anonymous for survival. So if I was to ask you individually, why do you work a 12-step program? We all would certainly agree we do it for survival as a baseline, yes? So that we don't get eaten alive by the drug or the ethyl alcohol that'll take us out. But I can tell you why I am in this program. It's not a superior position, but I'm telling you the why I am in this program is, yes, I want to survive, but I'm in this program for transformation. And I'm not asking God to transform me into someone else. I'm asking God to transform me into who I am. That my false self does not have to dominate who I am, but that I get to be who I am. When I was drinking, and early on in my life in AA, I could not drive a nail with a hammer. I could not use these. And now I work in precision all day long, every day, except Sunday, which we don't work. I work in precision, and I'm working at the forward edge of the envelope in this being. And I've gotten it clearly in prayer. Mickey, I've asked you to do the impossible. I don't expect you to be able to do this. I will do it through you. So when I make a pair of boots and somebody comes to pick them up, I have separation anxiety because they're taking my art out through the door and I follow them to their cars and it's like, get away from me. And I'll say to somebody, look at these boots. It's not look at these boots because of what I did. It's look at these boots because of what God did. It's not a game. It's true. I cannot do that job. I cannot paint the pictures, one of which I will show you tomorrow. I can't do it. But God gives me the opportunity to give him a vessel through which he can work. How good is it? Well, it's coming through me and him. I don't know. I guess it's okay. I guess it's good enough for what I can do. It may not be good enough for what everybody can do. There are many, many artists that are better than me. Many bootmakers that are better than me. But you know what? I'm the best Mickey I can be. One time I saw this thing in Ad Age magazine. It's an industry rag for the advertising. And the headline was, "Who has Mr. Brown's job?" And then they say, "Well, the ABC ad agency just fired Mr. Brown." You know, who has Mr. Brown's job? Who do you think has Mr. Brown's job? Mr. Brown. Because Mr. Brown cannot be replaced. We lose sight of that. Right? Only you can do branded. That's it. Now, what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, so like we step through this door for survival, and this door opens up and gives us an entire world, a new world. Now, what are we going to do in that world? Well, God will show us. In the course of this weekend with you, and I just love being with you, I got so flat after the last session, I wanted to run. I just ran out of everything. And I went over and sat in the church. And I asked God, please help me. I don't have the juice. I can't do this. You know, I just wanted to run. Then I went back and I laid down in my room and I'm praying to God, please help me. You brought me here for a reason. Please help me to do this. And I came in here and I talked with Mary and Deanna.
Danielle.
And I talked with them and we sat over on the cooler and we talked and they're angels. I talked with Rodney on Friday night and he was my angel. I can't do this alone. I can pray to God. But as Nate said, you're going to be the answer one way or the other. You know what I mean? So, we can't lose sight of the fact that we're not just in here to survive. We are working to just be the best us we can be. And I came from a family of all achievers, and all I did is get kicked out of school. You know, all I did is get thrown in jail. And when my parents were nearing the end of their lives, they didn't ask my two older brothers, the heroes, to be the executor of their estate, they asked me. Right? They asked the black sheep of the family. You know what I mean? And so the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And it's true, and it's real. So 6 and 7 are absolutely, absolutely, incredibly important. I'm going to let go, God, and I'm going to let you run this carbon unit. And we're going to see what happens. Does anybody have anything they would like to say? Yes.
I have a question. I want to get your opinion. A resentment, this is more for 4 and 5, but a resentment is to refill.
Yeah.
But, so, when you're doing an inventory, I mean, my opinion is if there's something current going on, you know, say, I walk in the grocery store and a man slaps me in the face. That's not a resentment, because it's just anger at what, you know, what's going on. I'm a human being and deal with it. If I'm feeling it a week later, it's a resentment. But at the moment, it's not, you know, because it's to refill. And I just want to know what your opinion is on that. Was that something you tell someone to put on a resentment list?
Oh, absolutely, because he slapped you in the face at 10:18 in the morning. It is now 10:20 in the morning. How are you feeling about it? It's now 10:30 in the morning. How are you feeling about it? It's now 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You can tell me you're not revisiting that?
Okay.
It doesn't have to be like 10 years worth. Am I missing something?
No, the reason I'm thinking of that, there's someone in my life, a child, that there's current things that happen, and I'm not at a place where I can totally be, where I am totally even healed, no matter what this person throws at me, and I have to interact with them. You know, if I've limited it to the minimal amount. But each time I get riled up, I guess it is a resentment. I mean, I was kind of wondering, until I can just be even keeled no matter what this person does.
How am I going to get even keeled? We have this tool, and that's this very useful tool where we can write it down, get objective about it, take it back to God, discuss it, you know what I mean, with someone, and get power.
But at some point then, the same thing occurs. That same thing will occur, and I won't have to be riled up about it. I can just...
Well, you'll have a reaction to it, and even if you have to 10-step it each time.
Yeah.
We can continue to use the tools. It's that secondary burn.
Okay.
It's that secondary burn. And the forgiveness is really hard, especially with somebody at the current time we don't like. God will show us to how to have an interaction. But if I don't put it in God's hands, it's going to be identical and it'll grow worse. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Does that help at all?
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I speak on
that? Just to add to that, a lot of the time, like you say, when things are happening real time, like incrementally, my day-to-day life, I'm not always quick to admit that's a resentment, mm-hmm. right? It's more like it's just happening, and I'm not necessarily even aware of it sometimes. But what I do as an alcoholic is I gather evidence to support my claim, right? So what happens is every time this person, could be anybody, does the same thing I know they're going to do, I stack that in my pile over here, right? And I'm essentially adding fuel to that resentment. But by gathering that evidence, I mean, it could get to the point where, like, they just look at me the wrong way from the other side of the room, and I've got this stack of evidence that just explodes on them.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, for me,
no resentment here, folks.
Exactly.
Ain't a grand to wind stop blowing.
Well, absolutely. But that's the thing. A lot of the time, I can't even recognize it because I'm strangely insane.
Yeah.
Sometimes around just interactions. And Mickey's right, like a 10th step to interject that, because what happens is when I'm gathering evidence, I'm essentially building up pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just building. So when I 10th step, when I utilize the tools that we have available to us, it essentially lets the pressure off, right? And it gets me back down to a level where I'm not this close to snapping someone's neck on any given day, right? Do I need to go to a fourth column? And that's the thing. Like, and we'll talk more about that when we get to it. But like, if I'm being vigilant with my 10 steps, it doesn't always end up in a piece of four-column inventory, right? But a lot of the time, I just build the evidence until it's so high I have to write a piece of four-column inventory, which is not necessarily effective in my life, you know? So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Hunky-dokey. Well, we ended up... 12
track.
Minutes early.
Yeah.
Just saying. And we'll end it here.
We are, actually.